this is the parsonage till about 1960. Obviously, the residence of the vicar. I can always remember the Reverend Fern, and he lived here. He was a very tall, straightforward man, and I seem to remember that he was notorious for not ironing his cassock or his cotter, which went over the top of his black. It was always creased. So, I mean, even at weddings, I went to weddings when the Reverend Fern was officiating, and, you know, your shirt could do with an iron. So.
I'm going to have a flight of fancy here, because this is a place in my imagination for those who have passed through the village. If that building is boarded up, then the people I'm going to summon are waiting for the moment when the light comes flooding in again and they can stare out at you. And if it isn't, if the windows are clear, then those same people might appear, but so quickly that if you blink, you'll miss them. A Roman woman in a tunic, when this was a good place for a camp with its water from the old idle river and being close to the Roman Way, now Kirtlington Road, and which ran through Mansfield and Newark-upon-Trent to the garrison of Lindum, or Lincoln, as it's now called. Then there is Redfold, the mighty Saxon warrior, who was here in the year 616 before facing the King of Northumbria at the Battle of the River Idle. They say that as Redfold's son, Renhera, if that's how you say it, was killed that day in combat, that the River Idle became known as Renhera's Wath, meaning the ford of Renhera, and that Renhera's Wath evolved, because words evolve just as plants and animals do, into Rainworth. Maybe King John is in there, having popped in from his visit to the hunting lodge that was first a monastery and became, of course, the home to Joseph Whittaker and his stuffed birds. Maybe there are people there who have passed through from more recent times, those who came to build the new houses, the new schools, the new churches, those who laid railway tracks or sunk the pit or wrote their sermons for the congregations before they moved on to pastures new, like the Reverend H.E. Fitzherbert, who had this building erected in 1912 and had a governess who many claimed was a German spy during World War I. Maybe it was his name that did it. Rumours sometimes spread easily in places like these. And if the rumours about the old care home turned out to be true, then there will be new people here, refugees and asylum seekers. And if they are living there, I hope that I have got to know some of them, to welcome them, as they try to set up their new lives here, just as so many people have done in the past. Right, we're going to get back on track now. So head back to where we came from and take a left onto the path I mentioned earlier, opposite the one we used to cross the heath. As you follow that, you'll find that another path will join us from the right, and shortly after, we'll come to some green railings with houses off to your left. That's where you'll need to go to the next track. I've got something else for you, though, as we're on the way there. From another religious building, the Methodist Chapel, a stone's throw from here. It's a little story that I was told, and a friend of mine is going to read it to you. If she's still doing so by the time you get to those railings, then wait there and just let her finish. Come on, let's go.
1934 it started. Four miners from Bolsover, who fancied themselves as artists and wanted to go for jaunts out to do some sketching. The Mansfield Society of Artists, who ended up meeting here in the village every Saturday for as long as I can remember. First the village hall, then the Methodist church. And I have finally plucked up the courage to join. My Uncle Ron was a member until he died. He was on the committee for years. Treasurer, general secretary, something like that. He told me that at one time everyone on his street was on some committee or another. That's what places like these are like. Committee-driven. It's thrived for most of its life, that society. There were around 100 members only 10 or so years ago, until COVID came and wreaked its havoc. But it's still there, and they still show up, week after week, getting out of their cars, clutching their watercolours and acrylics and their canvases. A bit older now, though, more in their 60s and 70s than their 40s and 50s. But that's the way of it. They used to judge you before you were allowed in, way back when my uncle first joined. The committee wanted to know of your artistic prowess before you could join the artistic fold. But I've been told that they don't do that anymore. That they understand that you need to learn to become capable. But it's not easy to accept that, is it? The idea of starting from scratch. I think I was put off by the exhibitions over at Mansfield. Not put off, but intimidated. I don't really know anything about art, about artists, even though I've always liked to doodle and always liked looking at pictures that people have hanging on their walls. But it was like magic, some of those paintings. They were so lifelike. I always remember one, and everyone talked about it, of a horse. It was like it was there somehow, in the frame, ready to climb out and run off. Every blade of grass, every wrinkle on its hide was perfect. And when you looked at it, you didn't just see the horse. You could also see the time that it took, and the commitment and skill and perseverance and patience and all the things we know that we have within us if we just bloody well buckled down a little bit. And I think that's why so many people talked about it and why he always won the public vote. Because in some ways it was like a provocation to all of us to just take ourselves a little more seriously. I've stood outside a few times on a Saturday morning and imagined them all beavering away on their masterpieces. And I've meant to walk through the door, but something has always stopped me. Even though for some months now I've been out and about with a pad and pencil, just walking and stopping and drawing whatever catches my eye at that moment. Trees, houses, anything that doesn't move too much, that gives me a chance of making sense of it on the paper. None of it's any good, mind. And if I see someone coming near, I just put it in my pocket and move on. It was the Turkish barber that did it, that gave me the courage. I was watching him cut this elaborate shape into this lad's hair, and I asked him how he did it. And he said, I just learnt. Someone showed me and I copied them and they showed me how to improve what I did and that was that. It's just practice. I wasn't very good at first, but who is? And he's right. You just need to put on your boots, grab the chance that's offered and take it from there. It took my uncle a long time, he told me, to really understand what he was doing. And that, although like most of the members, he wasn't a competitive sort, as soon as the exhibition came around, he would spend a long time trying to choose the paintings that he would enter, always with an eye on the categories and a chance of a prize, a certificate or a salver, or maybe even some money from a legacy that a previous member had left in their will. And if there were only two or three artists who scooped up all the prizes, and sometimes there were, then everyone would secretly get the hump and go back to their houses and look at their paintings of gladioli and goldfish and think, right, what's going wrong here? He even went abstract one year, my uncle did, in an effort to move the dial in his direction. But after the 100th person asked him, but what's it meant to be, Ron? He gave that up. It was onions in the end that saved him. Beautiful they were. The funny thing is that his father was well known for growing them and always won prizes for the things. He grew some massive onions, apparently. Gigantic! Uncle Ron wanted to paint his onions like that chap with the horse. Lifelike. So he did. And they were magnificent. He found his muse in an edible bulb, as my mother declared proudly when he won his first exhibition prize. Apparently, there was someone in the society who was allergic to the things, and when his self-portrait was exhibited next to Uncle Ron's onion number 17, this fella swore that he could see hives break out on his canvas. I don't know what I'll end up painting, or even what kind of paints I'll use. They have demonstrations and workshops and people doing all kinds of things, and I've decided that I'm just going to soak it all in. I'm excited. I really am. There are so many things you can do with your life, aren't there? Even in a little place like this. So many things.
Right, we'll talk again when you get to those green railings. Unless you're there already, of course. In which case, go to the next track.